Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Tangential Banter. My name is Ben Mowell, and I'm here with my co-host, as always, Jack Korzenowski.
Ahoy there, y'all.
I'm just going to let that land awkwardly for a moment.
It's only awkward if you make it awkward, Ben. Indeed. Embrace the silence.
If you say it's awkward, then it's not. So with us today, we have a special guest. I think for those of you who may or may not listen to Pat McAfee, I think he'd be called a friend of the program.
Indeed.
So today we have with us Luke Palandek. Luke, welcome to the show again.
Hey, it's good to be back. Before we started recording, I was talking with Ben, and I was kind of flipping back through the old episodes, and I realized that the last time I was on this podcast was 2.5 years ago, which is kind of crazy because it felt like we did this like a year ago or something, not two and a half years ago. But here we are. I'm excited to be back. We had a good conversation last time, and I think today's conversation will also be good and filled with tangents and good conversation.
I got a question.
Yeah, go for it.
What makes someone a special guest as opposed to a guest?
I would say it's like something along the lines of like the hosts enjoy having them on. And typically they become like repeat guests. So like, for example, like Joe, I listen to Joe Rogan podcast quite a bit. Not every episode because there's a ton
of trigger warning.
I know. Hide your kids, hide your wife. So like Joe has had like multiple people on like multiple times. Like a great example of that would be like Elon Musk. Like Rogan has had Elon Musk on like 3 or 4 times now. And so like you can tell that Joe likes talking with Elon because he keeps coming back on the show. So I say that's what makes a special guest, like someone you enjoy having back and talking to.
Kind of ironic, given that special usually means, you know, out of the ordinary, unique. So if it's a guest that you have on regularly, it's sort of an unspecial guest. You're an ordinary guest.
I kind of think of it as the guests who it's maybe a surprise that they agree to be on the show because they're like more famous than the show is in some way.
Yeah, like the status of the guest. Like taking that Pat McAfee example, like Aaron Rodgers, like being on the show once a week is pretty like, I would say rare because you wouldn't expect someone of Aaron Rodgers' level, like an A-list NFL star, to be on this this radio show. Radio show, podcast, I don't even know what you call the show. McAfee show, whatever you call it. He's on the show once a week, and like you would expect a star of his caliber to be a regular guest. So I think that makes that special in a way.
Mm-hmm. Who's Pat McAfee for those of us who I don't recognize the name?
He was a punter for the Indianapolis Colts, and he retired and started a kind of a podcast infotainment show, I guess you could call it.
It's kind of like, kind of like those sports talk shows, like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, Jim Rome, like there's a whole bunch of sports talk shows like on the radio and on TV, and his show is pretty much just one of those.
Yeah, I totally know those other examples you listed.
I was thinking that as he was listing them, like this is just digging a deeper hole.
I mean, what's a non-sports example? Like I don't know, the O'Reilly Factor, like that's like a political talk show.
You know, but the talk show is about sports.
Yeah, it's a talk show about sports. Yeah, they bring in guests, they interview them, they talk about different topics. Yeah.
Yeah. So a couple of other notes on your previous visit. So we were talking right before we started. Luke, you were with us in episode 20, season 2. our 20th overall episode. This is now episode 50 that we've recorded. So this is a little bit of a milestone.
Oh. It is a big milestone for you guys to make it to 50. I mean, a lot of people start a pod. I feel like everyone has a podcast these days, but not everyone like makes it to 50 episodes. Like, and you guys have, you know, you guys have worked through a few things. You know, there's been like seasons where you were posting all the time and seasons where, you know, it kind of died down for a little bit, but you've kept at it. You kept recording. I mean, I thoroughly enjoy listening to the episodes because to me, this show is just like people talking about life, you know, different life topics, whether it be cereal to movies to, you know, whatever. And I'm like, I think that's what makes the show nice is like, it's not always the same thing. Like if it was like, I don't know, let's say politics, because, you know, today is election day. Like if your show is always about politics, I probably like at some points like get burnt out because like, oh, they're going to talk about politics again. But because like there's such a variety of topics, like I think it keeps it fresh every episode.
My goal is to get people, you know, like as they're listening, mm-hmm. for them to ask, how can two people talk about this topic for so long? And like, just make it like the most, like, how can they have so much to say about cereal?
Yep.
But in a way that's not boring to tears.
Right.
That would like, be my addendum. Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's like, how can there be this much interesting conversation to be had about this seemingly very mundane topic, yep. or really random question?
Yeah. And that's that's a credit to you two, because I think both of you are very engaging conversationalists. Like you can keep a conversation going for a while.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think for me, one of the things I really enjoy about it is that it allows me to engage the divergent side of my brain. And I mean that in the sense of there's two different thought patterns. There's convergent thinking and divergent thinking. If you're talking about solving problems or conceptualizing, and divergent means that you're starting with like a question and then you're spreading out this wide net to like every possible conceivable answer. And then convergent thinking is you're looking at that set of answers and then trying to figure out which one's the right answer. Mm-hmm. But so you got to go broad before you can narrow it back down to kind of catch, you know, cast a broad net anyway to get the best possible solution. But so I think that's a skill we don't practice very often. I see a lot of people just kind of jump to conclusions, or they'll take the first answer that's put in front of them, or the easy answer. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to think divergently in that sense of like, what else could be out there? What other explanations haven't we thought of or talked through? And I think it's a good habit to practice.
It's definitely a jump to conclusions, Matt. You see, it will have all these conclusions written on it that you can jump to.
Amazing.
You're bagging on my reference to Pat McAfee, but like, how many of the listeners know that reference to Office Space? Just saying.
All the important ones.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I was going to word it in a much more crash or crass manner, but.
If you are listening and you haven't seen Office Space, we would love to help you resolve that moral defect.
Tangential banter, Office Space viewing party.
Yes.
Coming sometime this year or next year.
Whenever we feel like it.
Definitely.
You heard it here first.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, we had the Lord of the Rings marathon at the church. Like, why not do Office Space? Somewhere.
Actually, speaking of, so it's kind of starting to become a tradition. So I cook Thanksgiving for Sarah's family, and they come over and we eat together. And then Good Friday. I do this every time. Good Friday and Black Friday.
It is a Good Friday. You got all those leftovers.
Yeah. They constantly switch themselves in my head. But Black Friday then is Lord of the Rings marathon with leftovers. Mm. So it's, you don't have to like have any food prepared because you did it all before.
Nice.
So that is coming up, the annual expectation.
Extended versions, of course, right?
Yes. Which reminds me that I'm now upset. I missed my annual watching of V for Vendetta 2 days ago on November 5th. But wow,
is that the day they tried to blow up Parliament? Is that why you watched it on that day?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that the remember the 5th of November?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And what? Okay. Fox. I always get confused. Is Guy Fawkes lauded as a hero in England or as like a bad guy? I know he's famous, but I don't know if he's famous or infamous famous.
Well, they have a Guy Fawkes Day. Like, that's a real thing. So my assumption is you probably don't have a holiday for someone who's infamous, but maybe it's kind of a mixed bag. I don't know.
Yeah, that's weird. It's like having a holiday for Benedict Arnold.
Right.
But Benedict Arnold tried to like stop America from winning the War of Independence. You know, Guy Fawkes tried to stop the English Parliament.
I think
we celebrate free thinkers here.
I guess so.
To Benedict Arnold's credit, now I don't know too much about his history, but I think he got shafted pretty hard by the revolutionary military. It's not like he was like this guy who just flippantly said, I feel like being a traitor today and a coward or something. I think it was pretty patriotic at first, but then he just kept getting shafted by the revolutionary folks. And so he eventually was like, fine, if you're going to treat me like crap, like, why should I fight for you? And then he switched sides.
Well, I mean, just to highlight that point a little bit further, declaring independence and becoming a separate nation was not a settled issue at the time, right? Yes, there were many people who wanted that, and I don't know what the numbers were. I'm sure maybe it was the majority, but there was certainly a not insignificant segment of society who wanted to remain a colony of England. And so to them, the traitors were the people who were waging war against the crown. So
you're talking about loyalists?
Yeah, the Tories or whatever.
You're not talking about there being a, and maybe this was a thing, a segment of the revolutionaries who were pro-revolution, but didn't necessarily want to break off and be their own country. They wanted to just sort of get more better treatment from the crown as well. Is that?
No, I'm just saying there were people who supported the status quo of maintaining the relationship with England and essentially no change necessary, right?
Oh, sure, yeah. The loyalists.
Yeah, so I don't remember specifically what Benedict Arnold's actions were to merit, the label of traitor, basically, that has become synonymous with, but I think there were a lot of people who supported England in that war, people who lived in the colonies that, in hindsight could be applied with the same label.
Oh yeah. No. Yeah. There definitely were loyalists. I mean, to their credit. So this, the one thing that Benedict Arnold has going against him is that he sided with the pro-revolutionary forces and then switched sides, which I think has a, it is a much less honorable position than you were just always a loyalist and you're sticking to your guns. People may say, we may be on the opposite sides, but you know who you are. You know what you stand for. I respect that. Whereas Arnold, or anybody who switches sides, they're kind of just viewed as selfish and they're just going for whatever benefits them. And they don't actually have any values. They're just trying to get as much as they can.
Which isn't, interesting perspective, because I think it does emphasize loyalty, but then it makes learning new things completely irrelevant, right? Like what if it wasn't a decision on principle, it was just based on what he knew at the time. And so he made a decision with information that was incomplete or inaccurate. And then he learned, oh, what I was presented with was misrepresented. And so I originally made a decision that I thought was principled and it went against my principles, and I've since learned differently. So his principles haven't changed. It's just that he's become more informed, right? Like, I think that often happens where people change their mind and then it's somehow perceived as being bad because they haven't stuck with it by their guns, but like I want people to learn and improve, right?
I was going to say it. Well, Ben, it depends on which side wins. If the side that you betray, that you, if the side that you, you know, switch away from wins, you will be labeled as a yellow bellied traitor. If the side that you switch from loses and the side that you switch to wins, you'll be labeled as a valiant resistance fighter who stood up to the evil establishment.
Yep. I mean, the winners write the history books, don't they? Huh?
Yeah.
I was reading about Benedict Arnold. As you guys were talking, I was giving myself a quick history lesson on Benedict Arnold. Apparently, so like he served with the American forces. He kind of like felt kind of, what's the right word? He felt like passed over in a way, like,
shafted. So like
shafted. He won this battle, but the credit went to someone else. And so, and he also got wounded in that battle where like, so he was like in a lot of pain for a while someone else was getting the credit. And a lot of people think that like, that's kind of where the whole idea started. Like, hey, if they don't see what I'm doing and like recognize me, then like, I'm just gonna go over to the other side. So essentially his plan, like he was in charge of West Point, which was a fort in New York. And his goal was to like essentially surrender the fort over to the British and like give them the fort, and in return the British would give him something. But you know, people found out, the Americans found out, they removed him, they court-martialed him. He ended up switching sides and then joining the British for the rest of the war. He fought with the British, was a general with the British army. So quick history lesson for everyone listening.
So how did he end up getting cast as Dr. Strange? Where does that come into the story?
Wrong Benedict.
Ah, shoot.
Benedict Cumberbatch, homie.
You Benedict did that on purpose, Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not the general who betrayed the United States in the Revolutionary War. I thought he looked really good for his age.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if they made a movie about Benedict Arnold starring Benedict Cumberbatch?
That would be like Inception.
Yeah. Benedict within a Benedict.
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Now that reference is also getting old, but that's still a good one.
One of the best comedy movies.
Oh, yes. Totally agree.
15 I remember, years on, by the way.
Man.
We're 15 years past that release.
Yes.
You could not release that today.
Yes. You couldn't.
For multiple reasons. That is a very un-PC movie.
But it exists, and it's hilarious. And it's not only really funny, but like kind of really cerebral in spots. Like the level of humor.
I honestly don't know if you could actually make a comprehensive list of all the reasons that it couldn't be made today, because there are so many. It's like you'd be pausing every second to be like, oh, that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I want to pivot to our main topic today. So Luke, last time you were on, we talked, if memory serves, we talked about college education and which majors are worth it and how that whole experience plays out. And now, as you mentioned, 2.5 years later, we've got another topic that's somewhat near and dear to your heart. So you want to kick us off and introduce the topic for today?
Sure. As we were talking about like what we wanted to talk about, one thing that I think that had been brought up in a previous episode, and I think I texted you, Ben, after the fact, and I was like, I want to talk about that, was like the whole like gig economy, especially like food delivery drivers, you know, think DoorDash, Uber Eats, Postmates. There's a few others, but it's something that's near and dear to me because I was a DoorDash driver for, I want to say, 3 years. There was a season actually during the pandemic where it was my full-time job. I would go out and deliver food for about 35 to 40 hours a week. And that was my only source of income. I would go out, I would drive for like 6 hours a day delivering food, and then I'd go home and carry on with my day. But yeah, it paid well. Like, and not like super well. I mean, we can talk numbers, definitely. It kept me going during the pandemic, like in a lean season, where like a lot of places weren't hiring, a lot of places were kind of hesitant to hire people because, like, you know, how is the pandemic going to affect business? Do we have the margin to hire people? There was a lot of that going on in 2020. I remember, Ben, I was living with you. You probably know I was applying at a lot of places. Yeah. Not a lot of places were reaching back to me. And I learned about DoorDash through actually my pastor at the time, a guy named Donovan Santamaria, who both of you guys know as well. He had mentioned that, he mentioned someone that he knew who was DoorDashing and like making like 20 bucks an hour. And I was like, dang, 20 bucks an hour. That's pretty good. Like a lot of jobs don't pay 20 bucks an hour. And so I was like, I need to try this out for myself. And so I didn't make 20 bucks an hour. I'd say on average, I averaged about $16 to $17 an hour. Sometimes we're more, sometimes we're less, depending on the day and what deliveries I got. But I would say, yeah, it was consistently around $16, $17 an hour, which in 2020, and I'd say even to this day, is a decent wage. It's not like a... It's not like you're making buku bucks, but also it's not a bad wage by any means.
Was that like your gross, or was that, did that include tips or?
So that included tips. So I would say like half of my income was like the base salary. So typically any delivery, they'd pay you like $3 for that delivery. Sometimes more, sometimes less. Like grocery deliveries were like $5 typically. And then it was $3 or $5. And then the tip added on. And so the tip is what really makes the delivery worth it. Because if it's a $3 delivery plus a $4 tip, it's a $7 delivery. And I get all seven of those dollars. Mm-hmm. And if I like do two or three of those an hour, you know, I'm averaging 14 to 21 bucks an hour. You know, there'd be a lot of variation with like how much I'd get paid for certain things, and distance also played a big factor into like where I would go and which ones I would accept. Because with every delivery, there's an option like, do you want to accept this or do you want to decline this, right? And you kind of become a little bit of an economist being a DoorDash driver, because like you look at the delivery, you see how far it is, you see how much you're being paid. And then you ask yourself, like, is this worth it? And if it was, I'd click yes. And if it was not worth it, I'd click no. And then if I clicked no, I'd just kind of wait for the next one. So tons of those, like, decisions where, like, they give you about 30 seconds to decide. It was a little bit like Mission Impossible. Like, this mission, if you choose to accept it. If you choose to accept this delivery, it's like about 30 seconds to decide. And sometimes there were no-brainers, like a no-brainer yes, a no-brainer for no. Sometimes I have to think about it. I'm like, is this really like kind of thinking like, okay, I'm driving into Waterloo. This is probably like a 15-minute drive to get over there. Is it worth it? You know, and yeah. So lots of those kind of like split-second decisions being a DoorDash driver. But you really have to. Like you have to use your time wisely, because if you're just like accepting every order, like, oh, this $3 order, this $4 order, like you won't make as much money unless, yeah, you think about economically and like kind of bide your time, wait for the good ones, you know, decide which is worth it, what's not worth it. There's a whole lot of decisions, kind of split second decisions to be made as a delivery driver.
So did you have the ability to maybe kind of set up some filters to screen which orders you'd even see, like a delivery radius or, I don't know, certain types of restaurants or anything like that? Or do you have to do it all manually based on each individual order?
Most of it's manual. So there's delivery zones. So Cedar Falls Waterloo is like one delivery zone. So just imagine like the city outskirts of Cedar Falls Waterloo. That's kind of like, that was my delivery zone. And so like anything outside of that, like I wouldn't see. Like very rarely would I see something for like Waverly or LaPorte City, you know, something outside of that Cedar Falls Waterloo area. Occasionally there'd be like a deliver to this rural area outside Waterloo, you know, which was not in the delivery zone, but like kind of in that area, you know? And so then I have to decide, you know, is it worth it driving all the way out to, you know, this 5 miles into the middle of nowhere to deliver this? And sometimes it was like one time there was a grocery delivery that was, it was like a $25 order. So like for $25, I'd be willing to, yeah, to make that 20-minute hike out to the boonies because I determined it was worth my time.
$25 order, meaning that's how much you would get paid?
Yes. So upon delivery, the $25 would go into my account.
And the $3 is flat rate, right? So that would have been like a $22 tip essentially.
I think with that one, it was like a $5 base pay and then like a $20 tip. And this was like, and the reason they probably tipped that much is because one, it was quite a distance away. And two, there were a lot of groceries. I think with that one, like my trunk was full, my back seat was full. Like they were like stocking up. They were, it might have been around Thanksgiving time too. So like, especially around like holidays, like, you can make some good money because people are trying to get all their stuff for the holidays and they want that stuff soon. Right. So like they're willing to tip more, you know, also kind of thought, you know, this, the generosity of the holiday season, people would be like, oh yeah, you know, it's Christmas, so I'll throw an extra $5, you know, just cause, you know, so that was nice. Like you can make good money on the holidays and I was happy to deliver.
I was actually talking with a coworker recently and he said that something he and his wife enjoy doing is surprising somebody around the holiday. And maybe it's more than one person. I don't know how often they do it, but where they would go some restaurant that's more kind of like the diner style or toward the bottom end of the pay hierarchy. And so they'll just order something really simple, like a piece of pie or whatever.
Yep.
And then they'll leave like a $300 tip or something and then go sit in the car and just watch the reaction of the server, you know. But he said it's always kind of rewarding just to see their face light up and, you know, make somebody's life a little bit brighter for, you know, a little while.
Yeah, that's really nice. And I've definitely seen that side of the delivery business. I never got a $300 tip. I think the biggest tip I ever got was like, I want to say like $75, which was still a lot. And sometimes like DoorDash will like, they'll like hide half the tip for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe just to like keep you honest or like not like broadcast it too much. I don't know why they, so like, I did this delivery, which I thought would be for like $30 to like go out into the country and deliver groceries. And it ended up actually after I delivered, it ended up being a $75 delivery. And I was like, whoa. Like, I'd be happy if I could make like $80 to $100 in a shift. So to get 75 in one delivery, it's like you're definitely ahead of pace if you're getting $75 in one delivery. So yeah, moments like that were sweet. And there were a few moments like that. I noticed, yeah, Christmas, Thanksgiving, people were more generous tipping. Sundays, typically Sundays were a good day where like people would be generous with tipping on Sunday. If I'm like any Sunday I'm delivering, people were generous tipping then as well. So I got to see a fair amount of that, which was sweet. I mean, put money in my wallet and kept a roof over my head. So, I mean, I'm really thankful to those people.
Yeah, so that actually that brings up well, I guess is there more that you wanted to say related to the topic of food delivery or gig economy or anything
I wanted to
specific?
ask you too. Like, I know Ben, you've used food delivery apps a few times. Jack, have you ever used food delivery apps?
I have not, I don't think I've ever used them once.
Okay. See, like, the ironic thing about me is, like, I've delivered so many times, but I've only had food delivered to me once. Because, like, I often don't see it as a very economical decision. Like, why would I, pay a $5 delivery fee plus like an extra, $5 in tip to like have the food come to me when I can just go out and get the food myself and pay pay the standard rate, whatever the food costs. And so it was not very economical to me, but various people for various reasons, want to have the food delivered. Maybe they're like watching a football game and they can't really like leave the TV, or maybe some people don't have a car and therefore it's easier just to have someone deliver to you as opposed to like trying to take the bus and get out to Hy-Vee. But so Ben, I'm curious, like, what are your experiences with food delivery, and you got any stories to share there?
I mean, probably not any real stories. Well, maybe one. I remember,
Let's hear it.
so I got, I think it was Domino's pizza delivered while I was in college, and I didn't have a car at the time,
Okay.
and which is why I got delivery. And the driver gave me the pizza, and I don't remember. I want to say it was like a $16 order or something, and I gave him 20 and told him to keep the change. And he was like, "Are you serious?" And I said,
Oh.
I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Wow, that's awesome. I never get tips when I come here." Or something
Oh,
along those lines. So
okay.
like, because
I thought it was going to be a bad, are you serious?
Yeah, I thought he was
No.
saying only $4 tip.
Yeah. I was like, no, he was happy for it. I just kind of surprised that I intended to leave him any tip at all, which I thought was kind of sad at the time. Because like I understood as a college student, like I wasn't working, I was on a scholarship, so I had limited funds and I knew that. And it was like, well, in that context, even though I didn't have much money, I planned with the order that I had money to cover a reasonable tip, right? Because to me, that was just an expectation. If I order food, I can't order up to the maximum of the money that I have. I have to leave a buffer there for a tip. So that's the only story that comes to mind in terms of food delivery or anything like that. But to me, yeah, it's never, I wouldn't say, like you said, it didn't make sense economically. And I don't think delivery is an economical decision. I think it's primarily one of convenience.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, in that case, it's like, well, which is easier for me in this moment? Is it to get to where the food is myself, or is it to pay a few dollars for the food to come to me? And so, maybe there are some people that rely on that. I think that tends to be the exception, though. And it's more, people get delivery if they had an exceptionally long day or hard week or whatever, or like you said, if they got, there's people over and so they don't want to, they're hosting and they don't want to leave or send somebody out for it. I think there's a lot of that. I don't know. To me, those seem like the primary motivating factors. But having said all that, and this ties in, I had sent you guys both that link from early, I think it was from the LA Times about how as a DoorDash is now putting a warning in the app when if
You
users
make it
don't
sound
leave a
so
tip.
ominous. Warning.
Well,
It
that's
is a
what it said.
warning, though.
It's a warning. But so they, for those who haven't seen it, there's a,
Just explain it.
yeah, so there was a story, I think I saw it on Yahoo, but it's from LA Times, that was describing how DoorDash is now, when you go to place your order, if you don't put a tip in the available field, DoorDash will provide a little pop-up or a message or something to the person placing the order that says essentially that, you know, orders without tips may experience delays, you know, your food might not be hot or whatever. And then the article was kind of just talking about how that plays out and different viewpoints on good, bad, or indifferent about that change.
Yeah.
And so I'm torn because I can see both sides of the issue. From the where we are today perspective, I agree 100% that tipping is an expectation and in a lot of cases necessary for the people who work in those roles with our current pay structure. Now, this is setting aside all the tip creep that we've had really during COVID, right? Where
oh boy,
every job and their cousin wants a tip now. But so the traditionally tipped tasks or roles, right? Like a server at a restaurant or whatever it might be. A delivery driver, I think, is pretty traditional.
Yep.
So I get that. I participate in that, and I want to be generous and to not be stingy with that practice. But on the flip side, it really irks me that we don't have a business model that can pay for the people to actually just do the job for a fixed rate, right? So with DoorDash, it's like, okay, if it costs $10 to get someone to drive out to wherever in, you know, the sticks that I live, then make that the service charge for the transaction and then take the tip out of the equation. So it's not just dependent on my generosity. And I'm not saying this because I don't want to be generous. I'm saying this really on behalf of the people in the role, because what we essentially allow as a society is for companies to skate by only compensating their employees a fraction of what they should be, and then relying on people to be generous to cover up the difference. And so I would far prefer a model that took into account the actual expenses incurred by the request that I've made that I could pay for. And then if I choose to tip on the top of that, it would truly and completely be a sign of gratitude, of generosity. It wouldn't be something that feels compulsory or obligatory in the context of the situation. So like, for example, I like to see a world where delivery drivers don't need a tip, but if I call for food and it's like minus 40 or, you know, it's raining or whatever, something like that, where it's like, hey, I don't want to go out in this. So it's more than just a convenience thing for me. Like I genuinely am really glad I'm at home now. That's a situation where I would still tip in addition to, you know, a reasonable pay structure. But anyway, those are just a few of my thoughts. I'm curious what you guys think.
Go ahead, Zach.
I do agree that I think tipping has gotten way out of hand. And I think it brings up the question of what's the point of tipping in the first place, right? Like, why do we tip? Is it because we feel bad for the person who's working and say, wow, you don't get paid enough, I'll throw a few extra bucks your way? In which case, if that's the reason why, then us tipping is only going to hurt the problem because we're encouraging the employers to keep the status quo as it is and not fixing the actual problem. But beyond that, I was trying to, as you were talking right now, Ben, I was trying to reflect on, like, why would tipping ever be implemented? Like, what is its intention? And I'm wondering if it didn't start to encourage better customer service, right? So like a waiter or a waitress, if they're just paid a flat fee by their employer, there's no motivation for them to to serve you with a smile or to be chipper and in a good mood, even if they have to fake it, right? So if they're having a bad day, they can just be grumpy, take a long time to get you your food, stop by like once at the very beginning and then never come back again. There's no motivation, monetary motivation for them to do a particularly good job. That's where the tip has a benefit, where now they are motivated to make the customer happy. But what about jobs where that isn't the case, like delivery drivers? Like, they got your food and they didn't eat any of it. They didn't get the order wrong. Like, you know what I mean? Like, why are we giving it? What are we rewarding with a tip?
For them to speed to get there.
Yeah, so I guess that's the one thing, right? Is maybe like, did they get it to me on time or in a timely manner? But then that's just part of their job. You know, it's not like you do as an engineer. It's like, yeah, I did I did the assignment you gave me, give me a tip. It's like, well, no, that's what your wage is for. That's why we give you money in the first place. So it just confounds me. So in those situations where the tip will actually, or I should say where the tip motivates the employee to serve the customer better, I can understand why there are tips. But where that there is no modulation of how well they serve the customer, I don't see the point of a tip. Now, of course, one could argue that if they don't get a tip, they will intentionally treat you worse. But that's, I don't think, the same thing. That's just where they're spiting you because they feel entitled to a tip. And you could do that with anything. Like, oh, the customer didn't smile at me or say good morning, I'm going to spit in their coffee or something. Doesn't have to be a tip. But like, if you go to like a coffee shop or something and then they like you step up to the counter, I'd like a tall coffee with cream, please. Oh, sure. That'll be, $3. And then they turn the thing around for you to put your card in and says, would you like to leave a tip? It's like, why? What is the tip motivating them to do? They're not exactly servers because they kind of are, but your interaction with them is so brief and to the point. It's like, I don't care if they're in a bad mood. I'm going to say like a grand total of 4 words to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, at
least with delivery drivers, I think it's probably just like a speed and convenience thing, like where, like, hey, I want my pizza really fast, so I'm willing to pay more to get it to me faster. Because, yeah, and a bigger order, like an order with a larger tip, is typically going to be taken faster and delivered to you faster. Because anyone who's nearby will see that and go, yeah, I want that money. So let's go through like the whole like DoorDash process. So like you order using the DoorDash app. It gets sent to DoorDash, right? It then gets sent to like typically it's like the nearest delivery driver that either the person who's closest to like the restaurant or the person who has the highest rating. And that's a whole nother thing. But like, so it sends it to a person. Like if it's a high order, like it's going to be a big tip. Typically it's going to be accepted faster. And if it's accepted faster, the food's going to get there faster because they're going to go straight to that restaurant, pick up the food, bring it to you. But let's say it's like a smaller tip. Well, then that first person who sees it might not accept it. Then the second person who sees it might not accept it. And the third person who sees it might not accept it. And so it's going to take like 5 to 10 minutes to even find someone to deliver your food. And that's 5 to 10 minutes later you're going to get your food. So I think that's kind of the rationale behind it. I mean, I agree with Ben, but like we should just be paying people, like kind of like finding a formula where it's like, okay, the driver is going to drive this far and therefore he will be paid this much. You know, typically the farther you deliver or the more items you deliver, the more you get paid. But that opens a whole can of worms. It's like, what's the formula? Like, is distance weighed more or is amount of food weighed more? Like, and where's the healthy? You could put a whole bunch of math people in a room and probably not come up with any good answers.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a good comparison because, like, the example I gave of Domino's, a lot of, chains have provisions in their staffing for people specifically to drive orders, right? Jimmy John's, pizza restaurants, whatever. And I don't know their pay structure or their pricing, but it seems like for them, you know, if the delivery charge is $3, whether you leave a tip or not, the driver is still going to be paid a reasonable wage. It's not like they're only getting, maybe how would I say this? I guess my perception is that the delivery drivers for a restaurant are somewhat subsidized by the rest of the restaurant operations, you know, for a Jimmy John's or a Domino's, to where if they're delivering, you know, 3, 4, 5 orders per hour, they're still getting paid a fixed wage. And so the tip is truly a tip at that point. I don't know if that's true. If any of our listeners know, I'd be curious to hear, but that's my perception anyway. And so to me, it's like, well, what's preventing setting up a model that could work similarly? Obviously, they don't have the same fix. DoorDash doesn't have the same fixed restaurant, but there has to be a way of structuring your prices such that you could actually pay people.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree completely. I think DoorDash has decided to not do that because, one, it's probably you're going to have to pay some people to, like, figure out a formula for, like I said before, like,
right. You know,
what is the rate per mile? What is the rate per item? Right. And then does that vary depending on the restaurant? Does that differ if it's groceries or, like, fast food? You know, like,
right.
That's a lot of decisions that has to be made that you're probably paying a statistician or an economist to, like, do that, right? DoorDash decided, nah, we don't want to do that. So we're going to have, like, a $3 base pay for food, $5 for groceries, and then let capitalism take over and see whoever tips more gets their food faster. You know, here we go.
Well, and yeah, so that's one of the things, circling back to what you said, Jack, that I think a tip, I've heard it stands for the acronym to ensure promptness. I don't know if that's actually true or if that's a story fabricated after the fact to, you know, make it into an acronym. But to me, that's, you were talking about the incentive.
Oh, I'm gonna speak up. It's definitely got, well, I guess I was going to say it's definitely made up because it would be TEP. Ensure with an E would mean to make certain. Insure with an I means to, like, get life insurance, to insure something against damages.
Yeah, but you're assuming that the person who created the acronym knew the difference, which they didn't necessarily.
I suppose, but I think if that's where TIP came from, like, it started as that acronym and then people turned it into a word, I would think that they would have gotten the word right, because it would have to have been in widespread enough use for it to catch on, and there would have been enough people saying, wait a minute, this doesn't actually make any sense.
Maybe they do want to ensure promptness.
But that's
the weird thing, is there's two different words, but they in some contexts actually mean almost identical things.
Well, hold on, now I'm gonna go on a bit of a tangent here. If you're ensuring promptness, then that means that if when you insure your house, that means that if your house gets damaged, you will be paid compensation to fix it. So if you're to ensure promptness, if you're ensuring your promptness, that would mean that if you, who does the promptness belong to? I would say it belongs to the deliverer. And if they aren't prompt, then they're insured. So, okay, I'm still getting paid. I'm still, like, I made whole. So that means that it would actually discourage them because they're still going to get paid even if they aren't prompt.
But if you look at the purpose of insurance is to mitigate risk through the payment of premiums, more than what you would on average, the average person would pay for whatever damages are incurred, right? So you could argue that a tip is an insurance that nothing bad happens to your order. Right. Or that it gets there in the time that you've hoped for. Right. It's kind of a de-risking policy for the placement of a food delivery order.
Sure. But I would say in that system, it's not analogous to insurance. It's an analogous to a bribe. I will give you money if you don't, you know, eat part of my food. Just please deliver to me hale and whole. Please, I'm begging that. Here's money.
I mean, it's kind of the same way with insurance policies, right? You're bribing a company that hopefully they'll pay you back later and not reject your claim.
I wouldn't call that a bribe. They're legally obligated to, you know, if you meet the criteria.
Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, like that. They're legally obligated to. You're paying for a service. I mean, you could argue that any payment for a service is a bribe for that same reason. But I would say that the difference between a, you do argue that.
Yeah, that's the argument I'm making right now.
I guess, you know, you're kind of. I would have a hard time like arguing. The only way I could argue against it is that a bribe in situations where there is a bribe, that implies to me that the person getting the bribe is still not in any way obligated to provide the goods or the services they're being bribed for. They just have to do it. Cause I mean, like, you could offer somebody a bribe and they can either just reject it, say, no, I'm not going to take it. Or they could take it and then provide the goods or services that you're bribing them for. Or there's a third option, which is not available legally, at least in like a legal transaction, where they could take the money and just say, screw you, I'm not going to get you your goods, I'm just taking the money and run.
Which was, yeah, that was my argument. You could say it's a little bit tongue in cheek, but my argument for, you know, if the ways that insurance companies find to wiggle out of their legal obligation to pay could be seen as that, right?
Yeah.
Just like The Incredibles. Bob, how are you keeping InsureCare in the black? He wants to help the old lady with her claim or whatever. And he like writes, you know, like a generous like amount for this old lady. And then his boss is like mad because like, we can't be like giving out money. It's an insurance company. Yeah, Bob is like, isn't this what we do? Like, we help people. It's like, no, our job is to help our stockholders.
Oh my gosh.
Now there's another reference for you.
There's another, but The Incredibles, though, that's another classic.
It's a classic, yeah.
If there's one thing you should take away from this podcast, is you should watch Tropic Thunder, you should watch Office Space, and you should watch The Incredibles. If you haven't watched those movies, go and watch them.
We secretly scripted this whole episode just to work those things in.
We were bribed by the movie studios.
Yes.
Yeah.
We were bribed.
Not a bribe.
By Pixar and who made Tropic Thunder? I know Ben Stiller directed it.
Universal Studios?
Maybe? Yeah. Yeah.
So, exactly. Circling back to the point I was making, I would argue that for whether the acronym is true or not, the original intent of a tip was to reward a behavior that went above and beyond the expectation of the role. And so my premise is that tips no longer function that way in our society. When they become an expectation or an obligation, they cease to provide that motivational lever for going above and beyond. And to me, if you're working in food service, for example, it's an expectation that you don't spit in the customer's food, right? Or that you don't, it's an expectation that you treat them with respect, that you greet people, that you whatever, right? And so you shouldn't, there should never be an obligation to provide a tip for something that's an expectation. When someone goes above and beyond, when they're exceptionally conversational or, you know, exceptionally expedient at meeting whatever need that you have in the moment, that's what a tip should be for. And so because it's become so expected, now it's like, well, what about a situation where you have the worst service of your life and the person's rude and whatever else? Now you can refuse a tip, but then you're perceived as being some sort of a cretin or a Scrooge because you don't leave a tip, even though it was terrible service. So that lever it's not effective and it's not really available to you unless you're willing to take that whatever perceived reputational damage.
Yep.
So I think it's, you know, for whatever purpose the tip was intended, it no longer serves that purpose by and large.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
And
it's, and it's like you mentioned earlier, it's gotten out of hand where like you know, I'll go to, I'm trying to think of a good example. Like, I think the coffee shop kind of falls on that fine line of like, do you tip? Do you not tip? Because like anytime I go to a coffee shop, they got their iPad, they flip it around. They're like, all
it's
right,
gonna ask you some questions.
It's gonna ask you some questions, and you know what questions are coming. It's how much are you gonna tip? And it's the 15%, 20%, 25% or other. Sometimes I'll hit that other button and go zero because all you did was take my order. And I'm willing to be the bad guy and say, all you did was you took my order. I do not think this is worthy of a tip. But a lot of people, you know, because of societal pressure or whatnot, will go, oh, I guess I'll tip 15%. It's the nice thing to do. And then,
yeah, we've bought the narrative.
Yep.
It's so if you put like a coffee shop in an equal footing with a restaurant, play out that scenario, right? So at a restaurant, the person who's your server at a table, they're actually taking the order that you relay to them verbally.
Yep.
They're taking that order to the kitchen so that that order can be made. They're bringing the food back out to you. Mm-hmm. Right. They're also getting you refills. They're bringing you napkins, whatever else it might be. And so I guess now I'm maybe talking myself into the opposite position because they still do in a lot of cases, if you're in a drive-through, well, are drive-through in a counter the same? Are we considering those the same or those different?
Are a drive-through in what the same?
Like if you order at the counter versus ordering in the drive-through, would you tip the same way? Like, would your tipping behavior be the same regardless of whether you're at the counter physically or if you're outside in a car?
Oh, I guess it would be the same.
Because in the case of a coffee shop, a lot of times there aren't that many staff. So the person who takes your order is quote unquote relaying it to the kitchen because they are the kitchen and they're going to make your order, right? So now they've got multiple hats on. Then they do bring you your order back. So I guess the only thing that's missing is like if you have to pick up napkins yourself and the fact that you had to walk to the counter, but like you got to walk to your table to sit down. So I don't know. I don't see those two as something substantially different, but
yeah. I guess it depends. Like, is the person at the coffee shop, like, are they then making your coffee or are they just taking another order? So if they're just taking, like, I feel like anyone can press buttons. Like, I was a cashier.
Right, yeah, at one point.
It wasn't, it. I mean, there are a few things to learn, but I don't think it's a typical, sir. When I worked at Chick-fil-A, I never got tips. So, like, I guess part of me is, like, I don't have sympathy for, because, like, I never got a tip being a cashier at Chick-fil-A. Why should I tip some other cashier? That's kind of just me thinking out loud. And maybe it doesn't sound so nice, but that's just kind of how I think about it, you know?
Was your compensation at Chick-fil-A such that you felt like you were not going to, like the job wasn't viable without tips? I would assume no, or you wouldn't have stayed.
Yeah, I mean, and I was just a college student. So like, this is a different time, man. But I was making like $8 an hour at Chick-fil-A.
Woo!
Which, yeah, I know. Which, like in 2023 terms, that is not a lot of money. But back then, like, I was like, that's fine. Yeah, I'll work for $8 an hour. You know, this is just a college job. You know, this is not like I'm living off this income type job. It was just, you know, something I was doing for a summer. And so I was willing to get paid $8 an hour. I did not expect any tips. And it's just how it was. But I think the culture with tipping has changed, and now everyone's got an iPad and everyone's flipping their iPad around and trying to get that extra money.
And see, that's where I think this is all enabled by legal loopholes for positions which are defined as, you know, tip-based income or whatever. I don't know what the term is.
Like contractors? Because like, when I worked for DoorDash, I wasn't an employee of DoorDash. I was a contractor. It's kind of weird to describe it that way. But I was a contractor who DoorDash used, if that makes sense.
That's how they get you.
You're like officially self-employed, but you're only the only jobs that you have are with this one
DoorDash
supplier. Yep.
Yeah, and that's how they like they avoided like paying drivers health insurance and all that. And like I didn't expect to get paid or get health insurance because this was like a part-time gig for me. Like, this was not intended to be any sort of career move for me. Just so I could just so I could do to make some money. And for a season it was my full-time gig. But even then I wasn't expecting any sort of health insurance. I knew it was just a temporary gig to help pay the bills until I found something else. So like there was no expectations for me of like health insurance, but I've read some articles. There were some people who were doing it full time and wanted that health insurance. They fought DoorDash and I'm pretty sure DoorDash won. So.
I fought the law and the law won.
Yep, exactly.
So
go ahead.
Yeah, I think this is kind of emblematic of all the gig economy, right? Where, and to be fair, the not paying employees because they're being tipped isn't unique to the gig economy or to those businesses. Like that's true in a lot of restaurants. They don't have to pay minimum wage if the employee is receiving tips. So to me, all we need to do is close that legal loophole, essentially, that you have to. You can't have a job that doesn't pay the minimum wage in those contexts. There are other reasons, right? But in those contexts, you just remove that loophole and then employers have to pay. Now, prices are going to go up commensurately, which is fine. At least then I know what the cost is and someone's being paid because of the true cost, not because of my generosity. So I think that, to me, all makes sense. But bigger picture on the topic of, the whole contractor thing, on the one hand, I get it, and I am fully in favor of people having the quote unquote freedom to be a contractor or to, not have all of their life and benefits tied to their employer.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at what it turns into practically, it's a lot of these corporations that can pretend they don't have any liability or any employees. Even though their name is on everything, it's their platform, everything about it is under their name, but it's not them, right? And to me, that's a hoax. It's we allow it legally, but I think that has become kind of a cancer on society, and there's got to be, I don't know what the answer is, but I don't see it being sustainable. Like there's going to be, something's going to happen that's going to force that to change in some way, I think, for it to be sustainable long-term.
I think what's going to change, and this is just, me and my crystal ball here, I think we're already seeing this. There's already a labor shortage in this country where like not enough people are, it depends on the career, but in a lot of these, like blue collar service industry careers, there's not enough people who want to work these jobs. And therefore, like, McDonald's has been raising their minimum wage. And I think McDonald's is like even offering like health insurance or something. Like some of these like fast food companies are like offering more because like it's hard to find good health. And so I think that's what's going to happen. So this gig economy stuff is like, DoorDash and some of these places that do gig economy work are going to be forced to like give their employees like a set wage or benefits because like there's not enough people willing to do that job. And if they want good help, they're going to have to, pay for it essentially. That's kind of where I'm seeing a lot of this going. And that also just ties in with the fact that like less children are being born in this country every year. We're seeing some
real child shortage.
The birth rate is declining, and it's not as bad as like Japan or some of these other places where it's
Europe, I think,
is Europe, where it's like, hey, if we don't start like cranking out some more babies, and we're gonna have some serious problems. I don't think it's that bad in America, but I did some research in college because when I was studying education, I was like looking into like classroom size. And so like classroom size also correlates to like how many kids are in the area, which also correlates to like how many kids are being born each year. So I got to look at all those numbers from the US Census. And yeah, like the number of kids being born in this country is going down, like relative to like how many people there are, like people who could have kids, less kids are being born.
Yeah, and I mean our population is only being stabilized and expanded primarily through immigration, right? So yep. It's people really? Still yeah.
I can yep. see that.
We're one of I think one of the few, if not the only, like whatever you want to call it, industrialized nation where our birth rate is slowing, but our population is still growing. I don't know any of the numbers on it, but I've heard some stuff about that over the past few months that yeah. our population has been stabilized by immigration, whereas a lot of other industrial countries are shrinking because their birth rate has long ago ceased to be the replacement level.
That's pretty neat.
How neat is that?
How neat is that?
Some of these countries falling apart and Jack's just making jokes over here.
It's going to ask you a few questions.
How many would you say? 10 million?
Nino.
Oh, wrong one. Hold on.
Neo. Spawning.
What's that last one from?
That's from Kung Pao.
Yeah.
Enter the Fist.
Another movie. Another movie you have to add yes. to everybody's list.
Yes. Yeah. So, if you're keeping track at home, Tropic Thunder, The Incredibles, Kung Pao, and Office Space. Watch those yeah. four movies.
In that order. And the YouTube video
Nietzsche Walk. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Add that to the list. Man, I wish I had more time to talk. Unfortunately, I have my small group, my church's small group meets tonight around 7:30, and I got to take care of some stuff and get some dinner beforehand. But okay. Thanks for it. Sorry, we can't tangent all night, wow. fellas.
The guest calls it quits before the host, man.
Jeez. I should have really. Stated that before we got on. Because now we're kind of having a little bit of a moment here, but
Jack, but, we need to increase our status so that there's nothing people could possibly leave for.
Yeah.
Increase our status? What do you mean?
Yeah, I mean like if you were invited to be a guest in the Tonight Show or something, right?
You would clear your calendar. That would be your top priority.
We need to achieve status of being calendar clearing.
Gotcha.
Yep.
But it's all good, Luke. Thanks for coming on. It was good to have you back. And nice to have someone who actually has experienced life on the inside of one of our topics instead of us just musing randomly from a distance. So
I kind of think that's provided a nice one, though.
I'm glad to be that resource. Love sharing that perspective with people. I want to give a shout out to any of my sixth graders who are listening to this. If you made it this far, I'm impressed with you because we've been going for like an hour now, and our typical sixth grader isn't going to listen to an hour long podcast, but
I'm going to have that attitude. They're not.
I'm going to tell my students like, hey, I was on a podcast recently. You guys should check it out. And I bet a few of them will, because a few of them have already been like, they've been like scouring for like, my like stuff online, essentially. Like they found my YouTube channel, they found my TikTok. They're like, anything I do, they've been like looking for it. Which like they're sixth graders, you know, I'm their teacher, they're curious about me. I get it. So I'm definitely gonna put this out there to them and be like, hey, Mr. Palandek was on a podcast, you should listen to it. So if you've made it this far, this shout out's for you. Thanks for listening.
Wait, you have a YouTube channel?
Yes. I have a official YouTube channel and an unofficial YouTube channel.
Wow.
My official one is just like some like church videos that I've made and a few other things, maybe some education stuff. And then my unofficial channel is like my meme channel, where I've made a whole bunch of like meme, like funny little YouTube videos essentially. And for the sake of like not wanting to offend any teachers or parents or students, that channel is not under my name. It doesn't have my likeness on it. It's just out there somewhere. I'm not going to tell you what it is because I prefer to keep it that way.
Okay, I was going to ask if you wanted an endorsement, a blind one, which I would have given you.
You can send the link to Jack and I. We will not share it publicly. But
just No, I'll send it to you too. I trust you too, but for the general public, because I'm a teacher, I'm in the public eye.
I guess.
Yeah, you understand.
All I can think of is in The Office where, Ryan is talking to the camera about how he helped Creed set up a blog, and it's just a Word document on his computer, creedthoughts.gov/creedthoughts. And then Ryan's like, man, the internet's pretty wild, but he's like, even for the internet, this stuff is pretty out there.
Pretty shocking, yeah.
pretty shocking.
And I'm kind of curious as to like what Creed was writing on there.
The last thought I had on topic, and we can send you off for this, but was when they're talking about tips in The Office, and Dwight is talking about all the people he doesn't tip, and then he says, "I do, however," because he says, "I'll never tip someone for doing something I can do myself," and then he says, "I do, however, tip my urologist."
Indeed. He cannot do that himself.
It's such a great line. But thanks for coming on, Luke, and enjoy the rest of your evening. We'll let you get going. I think we'll just wrap up here and
all right,
we'll have you on in the future.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on again. It's a pleasure to be on for the 50th episode, and I pray for another 50 episodes. Maybe you have me back sometime in the future. We'll see.
Six seasons in a movie or whatever it was.
Indeed.
All right. Yep. Take it easy, Luke.
Yep. Have a good night, guys.
Yeah, so that's our episode for tonight, everybody. So I'll just put in our usual plug. Unless, Jack, do you have any announcements or any closing remarks?
Nope. Good episode, good talk. I've never used food delivery services before. So I did use Walmart's grocery delivery once, actually, now that I think about it, when I had COVID, but I can't remember the experience. It was just like, fill it out online, like what you wanted. And the guy came, and I think I probably gave him a tip, but I can't remember. I do remember that there were some things that they had like substitute, or, you know, they got me the item that I wanted, but it was something like a package of meat where there's enough variety between items that, wow, I would not have picked this one out. So yeah. I was not satisfied. Well, not, and I didn't even want to do it. It was just because I was sick.
That reminds me of a story my oldest sister told me about how she used, I think it was Walmart order like that. And the thing they substituted, it was like a gluten-free flour or something, but a very regular kind, as regular as that can be. And they substituted like cricket flour or something. And she was like, okay, there's substitutions and then there's that. I don't know what that is, but this is like not going to fly here.
Wait. You're telling me they had, I know you mentioned it might have been Walmart. There's no way that Walmart has cricket flour. What place are you shopping at?
This was in Alaska, so it got all sorts of strange things up there. But
weird. Anyway. I have wanted to try cricket flour.
I do too. Let's make something.
Yeah, maybe we can have like a food review, cricket flour review episode.
I, I want to try like brownies or something with cricket flour, because it's, I think it tends to be denser, slightly denser than normal flour. And I'd like to turn brownies into a health food so I can eat them more.
I think what we'll have to do is we'll have to make several items that, you know, that we try the cricket flour substitute for, like brownies, cookies, maybe more of like a bread item, like not a dessert thing, or like a tortilla or something, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Several different, not just several different things, but several different even types or categories of things.
That genres.
Genres of food. Yes, that's the right word.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, let's do it. That'd be fun. Like kind of like our fast food challenge, but we could do a cricket flour challenge.
I don't know if challenge would be the right word. It's just more of like a trial. Like, what is this like? So then we can let the viewers know rather than troubling them to make stuff out of cricket flour themselves.
Yeah. And before anyone says the like one world government, they're going to make you eat bugs theory, this is all just curiosity. I mean, I ate bugs when I was younger and nothing ever bad came of it that I know of. So why not? And it's high in protein. So
yeah.
It'd be interesting. Anyway, with that, we will wrap up here. As I mentioned, if you do want to be a guest in a future episode, or if you have topics, as always, you can use the link in the episode description. We love to hear from you, or any feedback that you have. We certainly welcome that. And hopefully you've seen how we've responded to that in the past. You know, from improving our sound quality to not researching things while we're talking. There have been a number of changes that have come about because of suggestions from our listeners. So
how many would you say? 10 million?
Oh, at least 12 million. Yeah, so keep the feedback coming. We love the dialogue and hearing what people are thinking. And it sparked, you know, ideas of our own for future episodes and things like that. So with all that said, that's the end of our time here today. Take care. Till next time.